So welcome to All About Symbian, insight number 39. We've been going for a fair amount of time, but we're building up to quite a busy period of the year with the Symbian smartphone show in London, all sorts of new devices about to arrive, allegedly. So welcome from me, Steve Litchfield, and from...
me, Rafe Blanford.
And from me, Ewan Spence.
The big news probably is where Rafe's been, because it sounded all very exciting. Heading off to Finland and Nokia. But so just as a Kickstarter, Rafe, what have you been up to? What have you learnt? And what exciting things can you tell our listeners?
Well, I've been at an event called Open Lab 08, or Nokia Open Lab 08. And this was an event where Nokia brought together a very diverse group of people to talk about the future of various things related to mobile, including social media, but also some sort of more general mobile topics, but particularly focused around social media and how that might interact with mobile in the future, sort of change the way we experience various things. As I say, it was a very broad group of people. It wasn't necessarily those focused on mobile, but they tended to have an interest of some sort in social media. Either they were designers or video bloggers or ordinary bloggers, artists, developers, coming from the America, from Asia, from all around Europe. And what the event entailed was having workshops around fairly broad category areas where we talked in conversations in relatively small groups about where we saw this sort of thing going. And we had some guidelines about where we'd discuss and then would present back to the group some of the ideas. I'll talk about a couple of them because I do think some interesting insights came out of them. And it was things like there was a session on social media tools, and this was it was quite interesting. It was very early on assumed that the mobile would be the key tool for creating social media in the future. Indeed, it was pointed out that social media wasn't even necessarily the best name for it. It was just the way that you do stuff with your device that then gets recorded somewhere for either your use or for more general usage. And you know, at the moment it's things like uploading photos onto Flickr or putting videos onto YouTube, but it could be extended to almost any activity that ties in to, say, location. But there were also a lot of discussions around the problems there are in terms of making this more generally available. Now, it's used a lot maybe by sort of geeks and via technical people, but taking it out to a broader audience is more difficult. And it was a recurring theme that came back was the idea that it had to really be invisible and no effort made in order to do it. And I think you two would both agree with the social media tools currently available on devices, that just doesn't happen. A second big area was talking about sort of geospatial and location-based solutions. So this was location-based solutions on mobile and where this might go. And there was, again, a lot of attention around how there are actually problems at the moment. We've talked about how Nokia Maps, for example, doesn't always work very well in searching and the metadata is quite poor. Google Maps is going a long way into solving that problem, but there's a lot more coming on the way, but also a lack of integration between, say, the desktop and the mobile. Again, I think something we'll see addressed. But it was also, you know, can we start to make this more intelligent in the way it makes our lives easier to live? If your phone's got a GPS in it, when you walk out the house, it will automatically switch any lights off that you've left on, so both an environmental factor and also, you know, something that happens without you thinking about it. And of course, EcoWell can happen the other way, turn on your outside lights as you approach the house, or maybe turn on the oven. And it's a lot of these ideas you know, have come up before, but there was a feeling that maybe there's we're on the edge of a new age, and we are talking probably 10-20 years out. Then there was also ideas about the future of entertainment, sort of with immersive gaming and music and film and gaming combining to be sort of one media channel. And it was the idea of one story, many channels, that you've probably seen elsewhere. But there was also discussions around social media in the workplace. You know, can you have something like Twitter to give a company a digital live stream or a digital consciousness in order to help productivity by linking people who are in different locations together? And they may not be working on the same project, but may well be able to contribute. And it's, you know, the ideas around knowledge management, particularly in the corporate environment. And if you can give a company perfect knowledge, then you can increase the productivity. But of course, there are all sorts of problems around how do you train people in those areas. So it was a very broad discussion area in these workshops, and I'll have some, try and put some summaries up on the website to give some more details of this. And we also heard from some Nokia presenters. Adam Greenfield talked about his take on the ubiquitous city, the ideas that came out of from Weimar and out of the Park Labs. And this is the idea that a city can be completely networked and completely networked, and computing around it can be ubiquitous and just, you know, integrated into the fabric of the city. So that's everything from, you know, the transport system with geolocation in it so you can see when buses are arriving, but also as mundane as having recycling bins that automatically detect when you put a can in it because it's got an RFID tag in it and credits you for recycling it. But he was sort of saying, you know, that's a bit of a utopian vision and perhaps, you know, unrealistic. It has been attempted in places like South Korea, particularly in their reclamation project in Seoul along the what was an ex-sewage canal. He gave some interesting examples there. But it was also, his central thesis was that the city as a space is changing because we're increasingly using our digital devices within it. And therefore the city that has previously been a very sort of physical, geographical layout and description is starting to have a digital overlay on it that changes the way we experience space within a city. And this is things like, for example, when you sit on the tube and you're listening to music and reading something on your phone, your attention and your emotional attention and your brain is no longer sitting on the tube. It's all contained within that digital device. And, you know, people can use it as an escape mechanism, for example, in something like the subway, where you're often packed in very close together. And that's quite a radical departure from how cities used to be experienced. So that was a very insightful presentation. I haven't really summarized it very well, but again, I'll try and put some thoughts together and put it on the website. And we also had a presentation from Udo Zasbo, who's involved in Nokia's Ovi product. And this was talking about the key trends that are being enabled. And, you know, the three trends, which are probably worth mentioning, are the move from the disconnected to the connected. So this is the idea of, partly the idea of convergence, but you move from, say, a simple clock to using it on your phone, where you might have the time zone update automatically, but can also be in something more complex like cameras, where no longer do you have to specifically make a decision to take photos off the camera and upload them. That might be done automatically and you'll get metadata with location. So it's the idea of what ubiquitous connectivity can add to devices. And we, you know, you can clearly see that in things like Share Online, but also in other of the Nokia services. For example, Nokia Maps, you know, you're moving from a paper map or a personal navigation device to a GPS that's connected and you can pull down search data, etc. There was also the second trend was the move from the physical to the digital, and this was the idea that you're moving from, say, a paper map to a digital map, or the idea that you no longer have a physical plane ticket, you have a digital barcode that you show as you get on the plane. And the final one, which was actually, I think, in some ways the most interesting, was the idea that you move from the virtual world to the real world. You know, traditionally, the virtual world has been about representing yourself in some way, the idea of things like cartoon avatars. But as these devices connect more and more with the real world, that sense of a separate online identity starts to disappear, and so there's a much greater connection to the real world. And again, it ties back in with the idea of the digital overlay in city space that I was talking about before. So the idea was effectively expressed in one sentence, is because it's more real, because of the tie-ins with the real world, people tend to express themselves more as a real person in the online world. And I think we can see that sort of happening as it becomes, rather than a sort of a separate space, it becomes tied in with the space we talk about in terms of our real lives. And certainly I think that's a trend we'll see more of in the future. You know, there'll be less of a separation that has happened in the past and more of a one space. And to my mind, this just ties in the idea with it's all just tools to make it easier to live our lives. And the idea of the mobile becoming the centre of your digital life has that connection between the real world and the online world. So maybe not so brief thinking about it, but that's a summary of what OpenLabs 08 was about in the last 2 days. And of course, with that sort of thing, the real value is in talking to people and the conversations that go on. You know, and I've met all sorts of interesting people, and it's been a really excellent event. And I think Nokia to be congratulated on doing something which isn't directly connected into their products or something like that, but allows for a lot of discussion, will certainly inform my thinking in the future. And bringing together a bunch of very diverse people, it certainly made for some fascinating conversations. But I'll leave it there because I'm aware that time is ticking on.
Yeah, okay. So is it fair to say that Nokia are basically flying you in to get to drain your brains for expertise and our brainstorming ideas all for free? That seems like a good deal for Nokia, for me.
Well, I think, yes, I mean, you could look at it that way, but as in any conversation, there's value for both sides, and I'm sure that Nokia gained certain insights out of it by listening into these conversations. Of course, they were participating as well, and certainly for some of the people, it was the first time they were introduced to some of these ideas in mobile, so it was also educating them that way. But yes, I'm sure Nokia were listening with interest, because everyone has a different perspective, and I think this is one of the most difficult things to do in the product design and the industrial process, is to actually make sure you're getting insight from a disparate group of people in order to create products that appeal to a broad range of people. And something like this, you know, gives them a very good insight to people who are living kind of on the edge of using and taking advantage of social media in their everyday lives. And there doesn't really seem to be much doubt that that sort of thing is going to become more and more important in the future.
Yeah. Ewan, any comments on all that?
It seems that it's a lot cheaper to do this than spend £200,000 for an agency to determine Nokia's strategy. So I do suspect Nokia got the better end of the bargain. But I actually want to know what you've done with the real Rafe.
You want to know what you've done with the real Rafe? So what?
Yeah, because for the past 38 podcasts, it's always been Flick R from you. But now, all of a sudden, it's Flicker. What did they do to you in Finland to get the pronunciation right?
Well, I have to admit, I was pulled up on that, amongst other pronunciations, and so I thought I'd try and correct myself.
Yeah.
I thought I'd try and correct myself in the podcast, but I have to admit, Flickr still has a certain ring to it, because I just prefer it that way. Yes,
like
I'm sorry, Ewan.
He's a pirate at heart, isn't he? I think these things work both ways, and the main thing there to point out is that Nokia also get their message over to people who are very active in the blogosphere and at the cutting edge of these social medias, and they get it over undiluted. And this was something that I brought up that I thought was really good about the product launches of the N85 and so on 2 or 3 weeks ago, which was that Nokia were going directly to the people who are writing the stories, not through a PR layer, not through an external agency, not through newspapers. They were actually getting a completely unfiltered story out to the people that can actually make a difference. And I actually find the fact that they're doing that, and they're doing it very publicly. I mean, lots of companies do surveys with stuff and will get people in, but it's done very clandestinely. This you know, letting everybody know we're having this meeting, we're inviting bloggers, we're showing them, just portrays an openness that I do hope continues.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, Ewan. And it's worth saying that all of this was streamed online, and there's going to be numerous blog posts and lots of embarrassing pictures on Flickr, or Flickr, depending on what you want me to call it. And I think that's a very positive thing, and having this sort of community-centric, but making it public at the same time so other people could join in. And there were questions and emails and text messages coming in from all over the world. And thank you to people who sent them in to me, and they all came part of the tapestry of the conversation. So it was, you know, it was really interesting. And I have to say, just from a personal point of view, it was a real highlight to be able to visit Finland and see Helsinki. And I popped into the Nokia flagship store while I was there, and was delighted to see that All About Symbian was one of the default links on there, on the wall of their store. So they're obviously reading it, and it was. You know, Finland's a lovely country to go and visit, so if you ever have the opportunity, I can certainly recommend it. Back to you, Steve.
Yeah, I was just taken by one point you made there about, you know, say you're on the tube and you're effectively disconnected from the real world because you're immersed in your own world of emails and media and movies, maybe even digital TV. But I have to do a question. In the modern urban environment, that may be something that people do, but it's not actually a very good idea a lot of the time. If you're immersed in your media on the tube, you're a sitting target for muggers and ne'er-do-wells. And I think I tend to embrace, and I really want to see more integration between the real world and what you do with your phone in terms of, you know, for example, live streaming, which we're talking about in a moment, in terms of geotagging photos, in terms of helping you navigate around, helping you be aware of points of interest and things that are happening around you. So I take what you just said on board, but I think I would like to have a more open vision. where you use your phone as part of the real world and the people around you, the people sitting around you, the places around you, rather than trying to be disconnected in your world of media.
Yes, absolutely. And that was one of the things that came through. You know, the problem now is there's a certain lack of cohesiveness to this vision, but we can just see it beginning. And yes, you know, there was very much the utopian view that it should be very much open to the real world. And yes, you're absolutely right. You know, in the tube example, you know, being open to muggers, but you know, you can take it much broader than that. And the idea that your phone may guide you round a city in a friendly way, and actually it's explaining to you what's going on in the real world around you. And it's the idea of, you know, perhaps your tour guide becomes your phone, or you're in an art museum, you want more information on something, you can instantly get that perhaps in your own language rather than the language that the gallery uses for its default labelling. So that was a very strong theme that came through. But with particular reference to that tube example, it was the idea that perhaps we need to think about the way cities are designed and transport planning to sort of help integrate those in the best possible sense. And I think quite a good example of this was there's a similar to the Oyster system in London, where you can swipe your card over a tube turnstile to go straight through. In another example we were given, people have discovered how if you put your card in the bottom of your handbag, you can just swing your handbag over the sensor and be able to go straight through. And it's changed the way they go through a tube turnstile, because it happens a lot more quickly. And it's that kind of design of the linking of the sort of electronic world and the physical world in a very strong way. But I do agree with you, Steve, absolutely. It's, of course, very easy to be sceptical about this sort of thing, but I think the signs are there already for us to see this sort of thing happening. You know, the idea of RFID tags, they're all around us now, but also something like the Oyster card system. But I would agree absolutely with you, we do have to be careful. And this is sort of the thesis that was being made by Adam Greenfield, you know, make sure that the way things are constructed in the future enhances rather than takes away from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we'll leave that now there for now, but there is a slinky link there, and that the Open Lab in Helsinki was all streamed online, or huge chunks of it were by things like Quick. Now, but live video streaming is something that Ewan's been reviewing the last couple of days and all about Symbian. Ewan, why would people, obviously Open Lab's an example where people want to see what's happening on the other side of the world, but generally, why would somebody like you want to live stream to the world, what do you actually use?
Well, there's the technological marvel as well, geeks and shiny toys, whereas before you needed a huge truck and TV cameras and so on to do a live broadcast. I mean, you look at how much stuff was taken to Wimbledon in the 60s and 70s, for example, by the BBC. All of that can be replaced by something no bigger than a box of Swan Vestas in your Nokia UIQ or whatever smartphone. So there's the sort of geek, oh, I can do it, which is always a good one. But it also provides a certain amount of intimacy as well. Practical points where I'm using it, well, I use a lot. A lot of people use it at conferences. So when we're, example, going to do an interview with someone, possibly at the upcoming Symbian smartphone show, if we were to have one of these live video streaming services running at the same time, then people could watch that interview as it happens, and they can also provide direct feedback. Each live video stream receives its own chat room, so the person who's doing the broadcast can see questions and comments from the viewers who are watching live come up on the screen. So so when we're, for example, if we're interviewing David Wood, which I'm sure is bound to happen, and he's happy for it to go out live, then we can say to people, have you any questions for him at that time, and interact with the interview. So in terms of someone who publishes and does a lot of blogging and so on, it's a lovely natural extension. There's also those moments if you can do private streams, for example. So if we're at a play with our kids, then we can do a private stream that only our family get into, and they can actually watch live those things going away. And sometimes when parents or grandparents are quite far away, then it's very easy to create these little small things. Any questions?
Yeah, I have to say, this may be an Emperor's New Clothes type question, but I'm coming from a world where for the last 3 years I've been able, on my smartphone, especially Nokia N series, I've been able to record at VGA video, 30 frames a second, and the quality is pretty darn good. Whenever I've looked at someone's Quick feed, a Volkswagen feed, whether it's their interview or their kids or their wedding, Adam's case, the quality seems pretty awful, even much more awful than I'd expect Quarter VGA to be. Am I just seeing bad feeds, or is the quality really quite low and things have got to move on a lot further?
I think we need a little bit more bandwidth in the network. All of these services have an option to either maximize for quality or maximize for speed and real-timeness. Because essentially these videos upload almost on a cache level. So, you know, you might end up at the end of a 9-minute video being about 2 minutes behind the real world because it's stopping and starting. So a lot of people will turn it down to 320/240. And we'll turn down the quality as well to try and keep the liveness going, because they're appreciating the live and interactive element more than the perceived quality. What would be nice is if these applications actually took the video and kept it in a nice high quality on the phone and then slowly trickle uploaded it afterwards, but I suspect that that would kill the CPU. This is already a very much battery intensive operation of streaming out on Wi-Fi and re-rendering and doing all the processing that's going on in the background. And again, it's still very cutting edge. This isn't quite for everybody. This is for those people that like to be out on the web and have everything on site. The people who they were doing blogging initially, the people who were doing IM initially. And eventually it will come down, but I think it's always going to stay as one of those, you know, 90% of people don't bother, 9% watch, 1% do. And I think this is going to maybe get to between 1% and 5%.
Yeah, I have to say that from maybe I'm atypical because I produce various video shows, but I prefer the way of capturing it full quality, editing it to within an inch of its life and getting it really slick and then having it viewed by a lot more people, but 2 weeks after the event, rather than having a live streaming to a lower number of people at lower quality. I guess it's you take your money and you take your choice here. Rafe, any comments on this streaming idea?
I mean, I think it has a lot of potential, but, you know, I think you have to be careful to apply the appropriate technology to the appropriate moment. So some things are very much of a value to stream live, you know, something like a press conference or maybe a launch or something. Anything, I think, which maybe fits into the news category. Other than that, I suspect the value becomes less. I do think the interactive element is very strong. So if you're doing something like an interview, I think it might be worthwhile, you know, to have it recorded, you know, almost twice, you know, once in the high quality format and maybe once in the live stream format. If you've got a suitable audience who can send in questions, of course, not everybody does. But yes, I mean, I would agree with you, Steve. You know, I think sometimes people use the new technology and forget that sometimes quality can be more important than immediacy. From the technological point of view, there's still some work to be done. You know, we haven't, on most mobile phone networks, haven't got H-Super, which is the uploading over 3G. So this really only works well over a Wi-Fi network, which in a lot of cases, you know, is available. And we have to remember these are still relatively fundamentally limited devices.
And it takes a lot of data as well, and Wi-Fi is definitely more preferable on your wallet.
It certainly does, yeah, and, you know, there's the cost issues. But where I do think it's really interesting is just like, you know, the rise of digital cameras and just mobile phones in general, I think it puts the technology to be able to do this. It makes it much more accessible because it suddenly becomes cheaper and easier to do. And, you know, we hear a lot about citizen journalism, and there are all sorts of, you know, sort of ethics and professional issues around that. But this technology does mean that anyone, you know, to a reasonable extent, can actually do this for themselves if they want to. And so, you know, I'm sure we're going to see more sort of amateur video being used in sort of news reporting. We already see it. You know, the BBC have used this sort of technology to broadcast live from certain events. But it's not just about mainstream media. As I say, anybody can try it. And ultimately, you know, there's still technological development to take place. And as Ewan says, it will sort of break down and relatively few people will use it. But it does rather change the sort of playing field when, you know, this kind of instant reporting is available to anybody. It's not just the sort of purview of mainstream media. So, I mean, that the kind of implications that has for news reporting, I think, can be quite profound. So it's really interesting technology, but it's not for everybody, and I still don't think it's quite there yet, having tried it out myself.
Yeah, well, another question for you and for me. I was fascinated by this idea of interactivity. So you can be interviewing someone and at the same time receiving comments and questions and then putting them to the interviewee, and replying. I have enough difficulty when interviewing someone, videoing them and interviewing, thinking ahead from what, trying to reply intelligently to what they've said and think ahead of my next question. How on earth do you handle that and look at your phone screen and see questions coming in, listen to your interviewee, listen to the comments and reply or integrate them? How does your brain's processor cope with all that?
In exactly the same way it does when I've got a producer sitting in one of my ears when I'm doing a live radio show. It just does. how do you not fall off a bike? That's a tough one, actually.
I'll tell you what,
I don't know, it just does.
I think it's a fair point, actually, that when you're doing it as a one-man band, it does become more difficult. And again, that's, you know, is that a sacrifice that you have to trade off? You know, if you've got feedback coming in from other people, you may get a question that you'd have never thought of yourself, but is the killer question in the interview versus, you know, being interrupted in your sort of your consciousness, which I think, you know, would have an effect without any doubt. But, you know, again, you know, it's a trade-off. And it's, you know, going down to the one that's a person, whereas, as Ewan mentions, you know, in something like a radio broadcast, he's got a producer shouting in his ear to help prompt him, and, you know, it's different levels of cost involved and different levels of quality. And like I say, you know, you apply the appropriate tool to the appropriate moment.
I still have to say that's a pretty acquired skill. I'm sure it didn't come immediately to you. And for any
I think that's fair. I mean, I've certainly with things like The Fringe and the podcasting, I've been doing those sort of interviews now for 2 or 3 years. So, yes, it does take time. And it's certainly not something that I couldn't have done 3 years ago. But, you know, in terms of thinking ahead, I'm usually thinking ahead 2 or 3 questions. And it will depend on what the person answers, which line of questioning I take. So I'm juggling 2 or 3 lines of questioning. I've got notes and research in front of me that I'm reading at the same time to decide those lines of questions. I've invariably got either a producer in the ear or someone at the side passing me notes. So just to have another flow of information, and one that I can easily just ignore, but can also turn to in those moments where I know somebody's now doing I'm now going to talk about the show and going on automatic pilot for 10 seconds. I said, great, I've got time just to look at the notes, look at my research, look at the screen, listen to someone in my ear. I think this is where we get this sort of graying area between the professional and the amateur. There's this space in the middle of people that can do it. But now using the internet and the technology actually have the leverage to do it successfully themselves without having to be employed by BBC Radio 4. I think that's where that comes in. Like any other skill, it's use and it's training. And I'm sure that the people who do quick will say, yeah, you just look at the screen and you just do it.
Are we going to see some quick or Flixwagon streaming from you and the guys at the London show next month?
I think we'll certainly try experimenting with some of this technology. As I say, it does depend on the circumstances, but, you know,
and especially the bandwidth.
And the bandwidth. So we'll have a look at investigating this and how we can plug it into the website. But the sort of thing I think it may have value for example, is when you're at a smartphone show or say at 3GSM, you can actually do a live report and summarise in a few minutes what you've seen that day. And it's a good way to publish video fairly instantly onto the site, because we sometimes have had problems in getting it up in a reasonable time frame. We're talking hours rather than days here, which is the speed with which I think media moves on the internet. So I quite like the idea of maybe doing a summary at the end of the day, talking about, you know, what we've seen, and using it as a way to get it instantly onto the website.
I think it's worth mentioning for people who haven't perhaps been to a show or been involved in the organization of a computer show before. You go to the venue before the show starts. You've got ample 3.5G data coverage. There's a Wi-Fi network covering the whole floor, and everything seems hunky-dory. You then put 5,000 geeks, each of which has got at least one, if not two, smartphones, all of which are logged into the network.
And laptops.
Laptops as well on USB dongles. And trust me, that the amount of bandwidth available per person is minuscule. So I'm rather sceptical here. A lot of the demos that I saw at last year's show, especially to do with streaming media, they all failed miserably because the guys just couldn't get bandwidth on Wi-Fi or 3G.
Yeah.
But we'll do best, and hopefully at the end of the day, as I say. Rafe?
And of course, this is, you know, this brings an interesting point, you know, with the infrastructure not keeping up with technology, and it's actually a danger on mobile networks more generally as we use it for more and more stuff, because relatively speaking, the amount of bandwidth available collectively in a cell is relatively small. And it's why in the past, you know, certainly on the All About Symbian stuff, we've chosen to do sort of text updates for things like Jaiku and Twitter, and we'll certainly be doing those again this year, and we welcome feedback that way. And certainly I've I've sat in a press conference and been reading Twitters and Jaiku things coming in and emails and asked questions based on what people have sent in. So I think it is possible to do it with a live stream, just as Ewan says, you maybe have to get a chance to do it. So hopefully that actually offers some insight into what we think about the streaming, but also some of the difficulties involved in using it in the real world. And perhaps we'll have this conversation again after the smartphone show, to see how we've all got on.
Yeah, there's a lot of things we've got to put in place in terms of demoing technology and using it out in the real world to demonstrate what we can pull out from the smartphone show and to just show what can be done, really. So we'll leave it there for this week. Ewan's just about to be interrupted by his kids, and Rafe's about to be interrupted by his to-do list of 5,000 things, which is pressing on his nerves.
Yeah. And just a quick note for anybody who's going to be at the Blog World Expo in Las Vegas this weekend, 19th to the 21st of September. I shall be over there. Kill through Resplendent and mobile stuff flying around. So if anybody wants to buy me a drink, it would be very much appreciated.
There we go. And Rafe, do you want to say goodbye?
And I'll see everybody next week on the podcast.
All right. Bye all.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. How's he seeing people on a podcast? I mean, it's audio, isn't it?
Sometimes I feel like doing long-suffering sighs.